The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, everyone. It's The Weekend Podcast and I'm joined by the Peter and the Steve. You're all right, lads?
Yes, hello there, Justin.
Hello there.
Have you been to the Grand Canaria? I like that. The Grand Canaria. do you know what? It feels like only yesterday we were just sitting around the barbecue there and, you know, sitting on my patio recording the podcast live in the sun, thanks to Steve and his bit of kit. You know, isn't it? Doesn't seem that long ago, does it?
No, another week has passed.
Yeah, well, nearly.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Technically, yes. Well, if you listen to this on a Saturday, it has. But obviously, we're recording this on Friday now. But, I tell you what, Steve, I hate doing the barbecue. You know, I hate doing that. I know it's a man's job and the man of the house should do it. I genuinely hate doing that, standing there, turning things over all the time. So Steve, fair play, did volunteer and did a cracking job of it. But I tell you what, don't mention the halloumi, Pete. Do not mention the halloumi.
No.
It got a bit...
The halloumi incident.
Everything else was fine in the barbecue, but we put halloumi on there, and it got a bit melty. Oh, look, he's getting defensive now.
I don't think halloumi is supposed to be cooked on the barbecue.
And I think Steve is. You know what? When you get different levels of barbecue. You get really bad, you know, average, you know, decent, quite good. Steve's quite good, I think. And then up there is there's almost a semi-professional and professional, you know?
Yeah.
And I think semi-professionals and professionals can do the halloumi. Steve, you're not quite up there yet, but he took offence to that. Steve, really easygoing, nice, really, we saw the aggressive side of him, didn't we? When we criticised that, really.
I've known him almost 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And for the first time ever, he got slightly knocked off about something.
We finally found out what really gets him riled, and that was criticising his halloumi cooking on the barbecue. We would never, you know, it's taken us 20 years to find that button to press, you know, has. And
he stinks at him about losing money on stocks and shares and all that, nothing. He's okay with that. He's all fine with that. Whoa, start dissing his halloumi.
And we would never stumble. We would never, if we'd tried to find that sensitive spot on it, we'd never found it, you know. But we just generally stumbled over it by accident. And even though he said, Megan had done a couple of nice cocktails for us, he didn't have to go. Megan said, I didn't criticize your cocktails, did I? There really was venom in his eyes, you know. And
I think I might have been a bit boozed up at that point.
Wow. God, I've never seen anything like it. Don't mention the halloumi. You know, it's like the war. I mentioned it once, I think, and got away with it. But don't mention the halloumi anymore. Steve turned a rabid animal there. But he's really going for it. But Steve, on the Monday, we had another barbecue with some neighbours came round and a friend and a family.
Oh, you didn't mention that.
Yeah, no. And I delegated again to Lee, who's South African, right? He's South African.
Oh, right.
I can't do the accent. Yes, right. They do braai. It's a braai. It's called a braai in South Africa. It's not called a barbecue. It's called a braai. So I tell you what, Steve. I'm scared now that Steve get aggressive here. But you know what he did, Steve? I think he's in the semi-professional league. He actually said to me, oh, by the way, we've got a bit of oil and a cloth. Said, why? I don't want the chicken sticking. Nothing worse than sticking chicken on the grill. So he wiped it down with a bit of oil, Steve.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
There's a bit of advice.
But to be honest, I don't think it really makes a difference to the cooking. It's probably more the cleaning, and I wasn't cleaning it, so I didn't care.
Yeah, but listen, Steve, take a bit of advice here. Next time you do a barbecue or anyone's house, just say, you've got a bit of oil and cloth, please. Okay, so I don't want it sticking on. See, that straight away suggests there's a bit of professionalism there, isn't it? You know, almost even before you start, there's a bit of prep going into it, you know?
How is Lee's halloumi?
Oh, it's fantastic. Absolutely. Unbelievable. Phenomenal.
All right, okay.
To be fair, we didn't do the aluminum in the barbecue. We decided on the grill. Didn't want to get a chance again, just in case Lee flipped as well. You know, maybe it's a touchy thing amongst barbecuers. I don't know. Or briars. So we didn't.
Right, let's not mention the H word again.
Yeah, let's not mention that. It's a swear word. And anyway, let's go to the stocks and shares. Rather than cheese and barbecues. First and foremost, you know, our long-term hold, it's like it becoming a millstone. Is it milestone? Millstone. It's around our neck.
I think it's millstone, yeah.
Yes. It's like a ball and chain. It's BT, final results. And for a big company, I'd say a 7% drop you know, on a £21 billion market capitalization valuation. A 7% drop on final results is quite a big... At one point, it was down 9%. And but do you know what? I don't see the problem here. Everything I saw there... I just told the missus, right, listen to this. And I thought I got away with this, because obviously, if you don't know the backstory, people, I put some money into BT for the wife there, and she literally, every time it's down, she's really having a go at me all the time. She made me sign a contract that says no risk, but only reward for her. So I get, yes. She gets the money back she put in. But literally, I said to her, the RNSs came out at 7 a.m, the final results and strategy update, cutting 13,000 roles, saving, what, £800 million there, £1.5 billion over a couple of years. I thought, this is going to bounce like crazy. I thought, this is going to nuts.
Yeah, I thought it, yeah.
I thought revenue was down a little bit, 2%. But literally, when I look at the, where is it? So let me just look. So quarterly revenue, or the fourth quarter, right? Profit before tax was up 98%. Okay, the comparable quarter last year wasn't very good, as after the Italian scandal. But even over the year, it was up 11%, profit before tax. So revenue is down, but, you know, revenue shows a little bit of growth, yes. But, you know, revenue is nothing without profit. So profit's going up there. I thought that's decent, you know? Cutting, everything. Anyway, it took a hammering, didn't it, on the open? Yeah, so I told Megan at 7 a.m, it's going to be a cracking day there. She didn't ask me. Thankfully, she did not ask me how the share price was looking. She was having a haircut, so I just kept quiet. She was having a haircut in Winchester, right? She went to Winchester, having a haircut. And so she called me. I thought, oh, no, she spotted it or something. She hasn't checked the share price. But she just called me with something else completely unrelated. And I thought, oh, it's like about 1 o'clock in the afternoon now. And I thought I'd get away with it. She's driving back. It's on the main news. Every channel is on the main news. And BT share price is down 9%. And she went, have you, in capitals, text me, have you seen BT share price? Angry face. And I thought half a day had got away with it, literally. But every channel, every news channel, it's talking about BT share. But do you know what? I know.
She shouldn't really be angry, because you have guaranteed that you will pay her back everything she's invested.
Yeah, but you don't know anything about the dynamics of being married life, you know. Anytime someone could have a go at each other, you know, legitimately. In fact, illegitimately, they'll do it. But they'll do it anyway. But but do you know what? I'm not joking. I know we've said this many times before, and this is a bit of a setback. But taking into account, these are the final results. So this is everything, you know? They're throwing everything out there. The kitchen sink, they can't hide much here. This is everything. And this happened last time. So they've had a couple of bad results, you know, in the past there. But with these final results out, which I don't think are that bad, they've kept the dividend, and at the moment, at £2.20, the share price is, the dividend is 7%. That's the yield you get. So that's a cracking yield you get. And we reinvest that, so we get 7% worth of our stuff overall, as entirety of the entire dividend. So, you know, where else can you get 7% on your money in a big company? And look at the chart. When it spiked lower in March, it went up to 216. Now it's gone down to that and bounced. So... And that would suggest a double bottom, which is one of those bullish, you know, technical chart. And I do believe, listen, I don't put a lot of sway in charting. I do look at it for tops and bottoms to see if a company's at the top, you know, if it's challenging a previous resistance or support levels. Yes, I put stock in that. I do look at moving averages. I don't know Fibs and all this stuff. I think you can go too far into a chart. But with big companies that are very liquid, it's definitely worth looking at charts. It's worth looking at charts anyway. But look at the levels it's tested. It's bounced off that. It is almost like a 216 level is the water surface, you know? Or the water surface is about 220. And literally it's like cork in the water. It'll go down 216 and pop back up. And that's what's happened again here. And when you consider all the results are out there, you know, everything. This is what we've done for the last 12 months. And they've had a bit of a shaky 12 months, you know, in about 24 months now. I think, you know, if we stay at this level, it's always an if. If we stay at this level and it seems to be consolidating here, then I think it's a gradual rise up, because from here on in, I think results will get better, and they won't. You won't see revenue going down.
It's not going to happen overnight, though, is it? And that's probably why people are jumping out. But it's I agree. I think it's you'd like to think in the next quarter or next 6 months you start to see some glimmer of positivity. I mean, that's big job losses. I feel sorry for those people, obviously, but I mean, that's a big old hive, isn't it, of the workforce, 13,000 people.
I mean, what people worry about is that revenue went down a little. Because what happens is, it's okay having good revenue expansion or growth, but if you're not earning the profit, which they are, you know, then It's useless. It's just what they say. Is revenue is vanity and profit is sanity. You know, so you can have a big revenue, but profit is where it is. And their profits are up on last year. Last year was a bad year, yes. So I think people want to see revenue grow because that's always a top line reported revenue. You know, so that shows growth. So you know, it's gonna be. But I don't care. I don't care if revenue goes down because they're reducing the business. They've realised they've become too big, too unwieldy. They can't react. So I mean, they're cutting 13,000 in the workforce, and they're getting sharper. So I just think a sharper model. You know, better profit because at the moment, if you look at their what is it? Let me just go their profit there. Final results. If you look at their profit before tax, let me just get it. So for the year was 872, that's fourth quarter. So 2.6 billion profit before tax. Now they're only 21 million market cap. So they are less than 10 times earnings. That is decent. That is, for a market leader pretty much, you know, that is decent. And that's to me is undervalued to a certain extent. So I just think from here they're a good valuation. And you know, that dividend, which they said they stood by, and they haven't increased it, which I thought some people were disappointed by. But I think you shouldn't increase dividend if you're going through a strategic review, and the sector you're in is very dynamic and changes quickly. You know, you shouldn't be sort of just saying we're up the dividend. That just shows a bit of recklessness, you know. I think on behalf of the management, so I'm glad that. And like I said, new chairman's come in. They are throwing the kitchen sink at it. I think generally, like I said, it's a longer play than we thought. It's a bigger animal. It's a super tanker to turn around. What's particularly annoying, sticks a little bit, is that one of the stocks we didn't invest in for our experiment was Next, and Pete accidentally invested in them because he didn't hit the limit order out. When me and Steve did, you accidentally invested in them.
I don't want to go through this again.
And on the same day that BT released their figures, Next released their figures, quite bullish, and they shot up by 7%, and they were 8% or something.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah, cracking.
So you were accidental.
I don't know why you guys didn't get involved when I did, but there you go. You live and learn, guys.
Do you know what? In all seriousness, where would I prefer to be right now, in Next or BT?
Next.
BT. Because
not now, but not when they were $39.99.
No, I know. But look at the share price of Next. I mean, let me just look at it right now on the daily. Let me look at it on the daily chart there. It's gapped up, and it is towards that 56. If you look back, there's a resistance level there. It was tried out before.
You know what? That Next. Yeah, all right. The whole thing, how I bought them, whatever. But what has been. It's been quite fun being, you know, stocks and shares should be fun, I think. And I was thinking the other day, it's actually quite a fun thing because it did shoot up and it went over for 50 quid. And I remember we talked about it and like, should I sell? Because it was an all time high and I didn't. And then it went back to 47. And I was like, I've missed some upside there and perhaps it will now sink back. But then it kind of recovered towards 50. And then, you know, and it's been like, it has been fun to kind of watch that and see. And then the results came out the other day and it shot up to 55, 56 quid. And I haven't touched it. I haven't done anything with it. Just reinvested dividend ever since I bought it at 39.99. And it's been fun to watch it. And at the moment, it's fun when it's going in the right direction, isn't it? Obviously. But I just think, you know, it's a good one. And it's a big lumbering stock, big FTSE 100 stock. And it's sort of, it's been a good thing to be involved in, and I don't know. I'm not going to sell it now. Let's see where we go. I don't know. It's interesting. All the other retailers seem to be plummeting, and Next seems to be doing really well.
No, but Next has come down from 80 quid to 40 quid, hasn't it? So I mean, you know, they're reverting to type a little bit. So I mean, sometimes
but the marketplace has changed massively, hasn't it? So you've got Debenhams and all that sort of struggling.
But genuinely, they have to be a bit nimble, aren't they? Because like I said, that sector is changing so quickly. The amount of retail stories that have had nightmares this year, unbelievable. And I think it's the same for Next. And so I think for them to command, and they were the market leader, let's be honest, but now they're not. I mean, or they really are, but the slice of the pie is getting smaller and smaller. And I can't see them holding on to that. So either they're going to have to cut, you know, like, I think they are basically a year or two away from where BT was, you know, 2 years ago. That's where I think they are. And you'll see massive job losses, stores shutting down, realising they're focusing towards online more. I think that's where they'll be. So
okay, but in the meantime...
I'll stop loss
at 50 quid and there we go.
Yeah, reinvest those dividends. Steve just said to me before we came on, he said, oh, you bought some more United Oil and Gas on... when was it, Steve?
On Monday. No, Tuesday.
Yeah, Monday's bank holiday, so I wouldn't have been there. Tuesday. And then you said, and what did you say to me then?
Yeah, it just kind of plummeted through the week. Not plummeted, but went down. So it's one of those hindsight things. I wish I forgot about it and ended up doing it towards the end of the week, but never mind.
I mean, this is a big statement, but I do see United Oil and Gas as another kind of Asia Met. I really do. I think where we're at now, we'll be looking back on this and thinking, are we nuts or what? Because I'll tell you why, because they've got a lot of projects going on. The Gaia X Tullow team, which Tullow is a very, an amazing story. Went from a tiddler to a FTSE 100 company. Very few companies do that. Very few. It's in the 0.0001% sort of category. But they're all ex-Tullow, but they've still got a working relationship with Tullow, which is a very enviable position. So they get offered things from Tullow that a small oil and gas company wouldn't. They've got a very diversified portfolio. And the reason why they're down at the moment, Stephen, it's worth reading releases, because they had the result of their general meeting yesterday. Thursday, right? So this means their resolution has passed to raise 2.5 million. That's a quarter of their market cap, That's a quarter of the new shares hitting the market. So 57 million shares, something like that, will be hitting the market, they said, on the 11th, which is Friday. So you can imagine, it's almost like, throwing a load of new apples into a bucket of water. I don't know if that works, that analogy.
Sure,
what I'm saying is, there's a lot of people, who got that place, that share in the placing at 4.25 pence, will be probably selling. Thinking I want to, but some people will be holding, of course. It's a lot of it through Optiva, a very good broker, and very sticky holders. But that'll create just 57 million stock hitting this market at 4.2 pence will create a bit of volatility. I gotta say, I did buy some more on Friday because I thought I can buy at the placing price. This is why I don't take part in placings. I've got more, a lot of people do take part in placings, boutique investors. But you've got to call up, and you can't do limited orders, all this stuff. So it costs a bit more as well to deal. But you can get involved in places. I don't, because I just generally think sometimes opportunities present itself, and I like to have all my stocks in my one account in Barclays Stockbroker, so I can go online straight away, sell, buy, place orders. But so I bought some at 4.26 or just a smidge above 4.2. But now that'll settle down. From here on in, they've got cash. Like I said, their market cap would be about 12.5 million, 2.5, a bit more than that, but 3 of that is cash. And they've got some major milestones, one with Tullow, the Jamaica seismic activity, Marcus, that they'll be getting, to be announcing that. And so they'll give more information on that massive high impact, which is worth about 200 million quid to them, where that stuff, how the structures work down there, historically, if you look at the success of the written success over there in those basins, been very good. I think out of 11 drilled, nine have come in as successful. And they've got more information now. And also, is it called to the which one is it? Is it which? But isn't let me just get my details. I wrote a blog on that. Steve, are you cooking in the background?
No.
are you a Karelian farm out? Are you who's messing around in the background there with utensils? Who is it? It's someone. There's only two of you there. Peter's here, isn't it?
No, I'm not. I'm decorating the living room, but is that it?
Are you decorating the living room?
I'm doing the gardening.
Yeah, is that it? No, different noise. I don't know. No, I'm not doing anything. I'm sat here listening to you bang on about something.
Yeah, so anyway, the other milestone is Coulterwell, Corallians, the farming they've had. So, and that is worth a lot. And listen, they're broker. Of course it's their broker, but they've put that well alone to be worth 8.8 pence. So that would, on top of what we got at the moment. The ultimate target, I think, is about the target right now, short-term target, without Jamaica involved, is 15 pence, I think it was? Yeah, and diluted, or 13 pence diluted. So, that is still way above where we are at the moment, 4.27 pence. And what I also like, when I was last blogging it, the chairman, have been appointed since our last sort of blog, Mr. Graham Martin. He was centrally involved in the growth of Tullow, into a FTSE 100 business, and he bought 60 grand worth of shares in this placing. Now, I don't care where you're from, 60 grand worth of shares is a big chunk, it's a big chunk of thing, and that shows a bit of confidence. So he's a guy involved with Brian Larkin, all the guys there, involved in building Tullow. And they're doing this again, and I just genuinely think it will be one of the things we'll look back on in 12 months' time, thinking, that was 4.2 pence. You know, yeah. That was it's almost like we have to realise sometimes the sentiment of stocks or shares. You know, we have to flip our it's counterintuitive, you know. When things are down, then's the time to buy, not when they're up and rallying.
So here's the question, and I reckon I can't be alone in this, is that, you know, it comes down to available funds, but also that there's so many different, potentially, especially in the AIM market, a lot of potentially really good stocks that seem to be popping up. Currently, there seems to be even more. I don't know why, but it just seems... Oh, we've had a recent kind of crop of names popping up that, I mean, you've made us aware of, obviously, but... They all seem great. You know, they all tell a good story, and they've all got some really good assets, some really good potential. And it's this thing of, do I invest in lots of those little ones, or absolutely put more money into like United Oil and Gas? Because I don't have that bottomless pit of money that we've talked about before. How do we make those decisions? You know, it's quite difficult, isn't it?
Well, I'm all for diversifying. You know, I genuinely think, because you, like I said, you can't guarantee any one stock. So it's always nice when one stock does a crazy thing. Oh, I wish I'd put more in there. But you know what? Normally those ones you really go overboard on may not pay off. And so that's why, you know, you should always have... I'm all for diversifying a little bit. And then maybe when you see a company starting to gather pace and getting somewhere, why not average up? You know, that in that way, you know, you get a few more confirmations that'll de-risk the project a bit. And then, you know, average up. Why not? I mean, because you think, oh, hang on, now this is starting to happen. For example.
So that brings us on to Horizonte Minerals, because I've done that. I averaged up in them. And the news out this week, very positive. I was expecting to see more of a move in their share price, but that hasn't happened.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, there's a lot. I mean, there are. I mean, the 65 million market cap, they're not going to move quickly as like a sub 10 million market cap. But I mean, yeah. So they're really their first resource on their Vermelho. But they've got two projects in Brazil, both nickel. One they bought off the Araguaia, which is their flagship one. They bought off Glencore for like 8 million, which is a steal pretty much at the time, but nickel was hated. Yeah. Nickel was unloved, I should say. And then they bought the Vermelho off Vale, isn't it, right? And bought the boys from Vale.
That's
don't know why they were in Brazil. They're going loco down in Acapulco. So they come out the resource that, and pretty much they had, a measured nickel resource of 1.6 kilotons. If you do that, it's $13,000 per ton. That's worth $21 billion. That's not including the cobalt. This is in the ground, of course. That's not including costs. But if you that's not including the cobalt, which is another about $8 billion. So it's around about $30 billion just for that Vermelho asset. And that's not including the other one which they've got. And Araguaia, they intend to be up and running by 2019. Start producing nickel. When fully operational, they intend to produce 14,500 tons of nickel per annum at 12, and even at 12,000. And we're above that now, they will generate $12,000 per ton. They will generate $44 million of per year of free cash flow. That's £34 million. And that's even that one project is just half their market cap. So that's not including the other project. Yeah, so it's compelling, yes. It is compelling. So it's...
Okay, but, you know, so I averaged up because it's going in the right direction, but I'm sort of waiting to see...
These are long-term plays. It's like literally, you can see that being, you know, a mid-tier in a couple of years' time, you know? It will be a mid-tier because it's heading in the right direction. So, check out the shareholders of that company. Well-connected. And Jeremy Martin is a very professional guy. Jeremy Martin, the CEO I spoke to, right? He's been working on that project for like almost 20 years, all his life pretty much. He's only 44, I think. So there. But he's he's one of these young guys I think will go on to have great success and be, you know, this will give him the stamp of approval. He's this Horizonte. And he would be, you know, on lots of boards of other companies because they said he's done this with Horizonte. He'll be, you know, this is Jeremy Martin who took Horizonte from this to this. And he's on a couple of boards. He's on board of Eris Resources, actually, which I've chatted to quite a small cap. Anyway, talking about opportunities, you mentioned, one of those I wrote about last week, Cora Gold. Did you read about that? Steve, did you read the blog?
I think I did, yeah.
Tell me all about it.
I think it was one of those ones I read and it kind of went in and went out.
It's, well, do you know what? It's easy to do that. I'm on the podcast where I talk to lots of companies every day, right? But certain things then stick out in my head. Now, I've had the CEO, Dr. John Forster, on the podcast several times. Very unassuming guy. Doesn't sell it. It doesn't give it the hard sell. You know, it doesn't at all. I quite like him. Really nice guy. It's more of a geologist than a PR guy, you know, which is not a bad thing. Like I said, it's always good for a management to undersell, over-deliver, rather than, you know, oversell and under-deliver, you know. But Cora Gold, are you getting your notes out? Cora Gold has focused on two world-class gold regions in Mali and Senegal, right? These are companies, of course, you know, mining's all about geology. And so if your next-door neighbour is mining gold, you should check your backyard, because a good chance you'll have gold in your backyard. You know, it doesn't, obviously it may be in a different pattern, the core of the ore may be in a different pattern, may miss your property, but that's the way it works. You know, if you're in a province that historically has mined, you know, millions of ounces of gold, it's worth doing some assays and some drills. Anyway, they're in that area. So when you become an explorer, it's very risky, because, you know, you may drill down and miss the target completely, you know, or you may catch the edge of it somewhere. So that's why you have a lot of drill holes in. But so I like the fact that they're owned, the shareholders' registers are cracking, by the way. Hummingbird Resources were successful, being on the podcast, successful gold producer. They went from explorer to producer in December. They've been on the podcast several times. They hold 33.85% of Cora stock, right? So they know what they're doing. They're just down the road. Their license is just down the road. It's about 10K south of one of Cora's assets, and about 60K south of the other one. So they hold a thing, but you're never sure. But they come out with two positive drill results, right, on both their products. San Coro is extremely encouraging, high-grade gold intercepts, and they're saying here it's got a large gold mineralized structure, and they reckon it could be a standalone project. So could be a potential to become a significant development asset of, and they say you need to get really a resource there of 1 million ounces. And that transfers into recoverable resources. 60 or 70% of that will translate into recoverable resources. So you say, let's say 600,000 ounces. And so you can do 10% out of that a year, 10-year mine life, you know? So you can work that out. So 60,000 ounces, say for round figure's sake, let's do 50,000 ounces, right? Steve, got your maths head on?
Go on then.
50,000 ounces a year times the price of gold per ounce, which is $1,300. What's that?
I'm never going to work that out. Come on.
You can do it.
Give us a ballpark figure. Give us a ballpark figure. So 50,000 ounces a year times $1,300.
$15,600.
$65 million, that is, right? That's revenue, right? Now, even if you put a 10% on that, that's, and it's a lot higher than that. The profit margin will be closer to 30-40%. But that's $6.5 million of profit on the one thing alone, right? And it'll be a lot higher now. You times that by three, almost. And so you could say profit from 1 year at San Ancora, which is their flagship, will be bigger than their market cap. Now, I know Steve is good at that, aren't
he? I'm just laughing, because I'm thinking Steve's got $15,000. $65 million. Close.
Yeah, close, Steve. So anyway, they've drilled another thing called Tekladoku. I've spelled it wrong on my blog, they spot that. Tekladoku, right? So that's the second place they've been drilling on. Now, what stood up to me was when Hayden Locke, who's the business development manager, came on the podcast, right? And he said to me, I'll quote what he said here. And like I said, he's a bit more of a salesperson than Dr. John Forster, the CEO. And he said, listen, this initial drill result in Tekladoku, which is their second project, compares very favourably to what is probably one of the best discoveries in the last 10 years in Mali, which is a well-known gold, you know, providence, you know, a gold discovery in Providence. So, last 10 years.
What?
So
Providence?
Providence. Providence. It has Providence, yes. But Providence. Providence.
Providence, what? From the Lord?
Providence, yes. Providence. Providence of Providence in the province. The province. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what. Right. Okay. Whatever. Right. Good. In that region.
So in that region, this is not their flagship. This is their second thing. They're saying this is the first initial drill results compare favourably to what is one of the best gold discoveries in Mali in the last 10 years. And so they're talking about initial drill results for any year. So that's the last 10 years turned out to be a 5 million ounce resource. So, you know, that's five times as big as what Sankora, their flagship, is going to be. So they're going, what? Hang on a sec. But they've got other targets too. And then I looked through this and thought, I looked at the board. The board is phenomenal. It is like the board of like and the shareholders of a FTSE 250, you know? So I'll give you an example. Some of the shareholders, right? It's Paul Quirk. Who's Paul Quirk, you may ask? Well, put it this way.
Paul Quirk.
Ask that. He holds 13.33%. He's a non-executive director, right? Now, the Brookstone business is also part of the Quirk family. They own 5.4%. Now, the Quirk family are well known in the mining community. His father, Patrick, one of the founders of Lion Ore, right? Lion Ore in 2007 was bought by Norilsk Nickel, one of the world's largest mining companies, for $6.3 billion, and they were the major shareholders of that. They were the founders of Lion Ore, major shareholders. They sold that for $6.3 billion. They've got a bit of money, you know?
Yeah.
The Quirk family and Paul Quirk's the non-executive director of Cora. What, a tiny little market cap? 8 million? What? What's going on there? You know, you go look at this. Why are these big guys involved in this small cap? Huh? Now, I looked at another share register, the Lord Farmer. Oh, hello, I'm the Lord Farmer. It's like, what? Who is that? I said, what is that? A name? A brand? What is that? I thought it was a brand of sausages. Because I knew there's a farmer, isn't there? Is he called the Black Farmer? I think he's called the Black Farmer. He's a black guy. Farms and sausages. But I thought, who is that? So I did a look up, right? Turns out this guy's Michael Farmer. He's called the Lord Farmer. He's a British businessman, philanthropist, former treasurer of the Conservative Party, life peer in the House of Lords. Another big name. So he's called Mr. Copper, he's well known as, because he owns a company called Red Kite Group. It's a hedge fund which had $2 billion of assets under management in 2016. And he's responsible for shipping around 15 to 20% of China's copper supplies. China's copper supplies. This guy is invested in Cora Gold.
Cora Gold,
These guys got very deep pockets and long arms, you know, not short arms. He's worth about $150 million himself. So this company's got cash, it's got, you know, boardholders, shareholders, everything. I quite like it. Like I said, you've got to have a bit of gold in your portfolio. You've got to have a bit of gold. You know, it's worth having this. A core of gold, put it on your watch list. Do some research. Like I said, still very risky, still exploration, but initial drill results looking very, very good. Yeah. And they've got more drill results to come out. But I quite like Cora Gold. I quite like them. But I've chatted them for a long time, you know, quite a few times. Steve,
you got me thinking now. So how would I know if there's gold in my back garden?
Well, Steve, I'd say, has anyone else, first and foremost, discovered gold around you? Welsh gold is very good, isn't it? Is there
a particular kind of climate or kind of location where gold is kind of located, or is it just random?
Yeah, Cardiff.
Well, you'd have but you'd have the geology that supports that kind of mineralization. So you'd have to look in.
Can I suggest a little bit of homework, perhaps, for this week? Steve.
Yes, gold.
Dig 10 foot down in your garden.
So it's quartz?
See if you find quartz.
Gold is most often found in quartz rock. When quartz is found in gold-bearing areas, it's possible that gold will be found as well. So if you've got quartz, Steve, right? No, I don't mean if you dig down and find an old watch. Then, you know, the white colour of quartz makes it easy. So it's very sparkly, isn't it, quartz? But in quartz, you find that.
You might have a dig down and report back next week.
Well, to be fair, I've already dug a metre hole when I was doing my patio, so I didn't find
anything. You've got to go deeper than that, Steve, 10 foot at least.
Steve, if you find quartz at a metre, that's from surface, fella, and you know, then you'd have to find out, you know, do a little bit of say, what grams per tonne is that, and it's amazing.
I always thought your garden looks quite quartzy. Quartz. Could be quartzy there, quartz. Yeah, might find some quartz if we start digging. So have a go, report next week.
All right, I'll let you know.
So that's it. Anyway, that's pretty much it for this week, I think. But Steve, let us know how your exploration goes in Cardiff.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know, we could be discussing your little, what would you call your little gold company, Steve?
I don't know.
West One, I suppose, isn't it?
West One. West Gold.
Isn't that your thing? You know, West 18, that's what it's called, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's your company, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, West 18 Gold.
West 18 Gold.
Although, it sounds more like an oldies kind of version of the first part of the company, doesn't it?
Maybe we should raise some money anyway, Steve, and just float and then just start doing exploration with the money. You know, that's what we need money for, because drilling's a lot. Just say, and you know, you could be a CEO.
Would you invest into my exploration?
No. Yep. Come in on the podcast. No, I wouldn't. On the podcast, you come on the podcast, Aims. Yeah, the thing is, you boys convinced me, so I raised 3 million, and now I'm digging in my back garden.
That would be brilliant.
What kind of drilling are you doing, Steve? I don't know, really. Oh. No.
Okay.
I get a shovel, really. I'm going to shovel it down, see what happens. I ain't going to bother with drills at the moment. Cause
what do you need the funding for? Well, I need a new spade because it broke.
All I've got is a B&Q drill at the moment, but it's only going like 6 inches down. So I'm going to use a shovel.
Yeah.
He's doing
reverse. What are you doing?
I know. Are you going to do it? He's digging already, by the sounds of it.
Exactly. drill.
Are you going to do air core drilling, Steve? Reverse circulation or diamond drilling? No, shovel, really. You know, bucket and shovel.
Pickaxe.
Well, it's cheap anyway, isn't it? You know, so,
yeah.
So then if I don't find it, what I'm going to do then is blow the 2.5 million. I put 500,000 in the bank. Spent 2.5 million on lottery tickets. Just playing in a jackpot. You're a millions. That'd be good. I wonder if we can do that. Raise money to do that. Buy 1 million tickets. So...
Well, you're trying to do a similar thing, aren't you? I noticed on Twitter where you're going to share the jackpot.
Yes, yeah.
But that's not really a similar thing because no one else is investing in it. You're just being kind and sharing if you win it.
Yes, that's it. I'm just being kind there, yes.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to build a Twitter profile.
I got some people saying, some people saying, what are they saying? I'll give this to charity. Thank you very much. You know, thanking me for it, you know? And I'm thinking, that's very nice, you saying that, but you got 148 million chance to win. Why not just give some money to charity? Because there's more chance of me doing that. I don't know what the heck I'm watching on Twitter. I've got this guy at a bus stop, looks like he's pushing this lady from behind, very drunk. I don't know what they're doing. She's got trousers around her ankles. Anyway,
So while you're recording the podcast, you've got Twitter just playing there in the background.
Anyway, I'll share that.
Share that with him.
Yeah, I don't know if I should actually. But that is a mess. They are off their face on something. She's now stumbling back with no.
Are you sure it's Twitter?
That's a different website. It's not Twitter. Yeah, it's.
No, it's just your video from last night. You and the wife.
Yeah, go. We're in a state. Anyway, lovely. I don't know who put that up. I shouldn't have filmed that. Have a nice weekend, boys.
Yes,
and anything happening the weekend, Steve? You practicing your halloumi barbecuing? Don't mention it.
Nothing planned like that.
He's gone. You can tell he's angry now.
All right then. Well, listen. Have a nice weekend, boys. And I'll get another blog. By the way, just a quick plug for the podcast, for the blog. By the way, if you want to subscribe, you can do. You will be getting. I've bought a new company this week. I just thought assets, phenomenal size. We're talking about world class, and it's in the copper field. I've been reading lots about copper deficits as well. So it's in copper. It's in gold. Massive assets. Tiny market cap. Plus they have cash. So I'm just thinking, do you know what? If we keep going down this road of copper, there are new major mines opening, new copper mines opening. So, you know, you've got to think there are going to be some majors hunting around for big assets. And this is an asset that can be bought quite easily, I think, with the copper market going the way it is. So anyway, I'll be writing about that company. It's risky. Yes, it is risky. It's small cap, tiny market cap. But I just think, you know, the dynamics are shaping up nicely for copper. You know, there's going to be a supply deficit over the next few years. And that was even before this EV revolution came into play. So it's going to be even worse. So I just think you will have majors, you know, looking around for copper assets in the next few years. Anyway, boys, by the way, you can subscribe to the blog. You can see that on my Twitter bio somewhere. And read the blog, yeah? All right then, lads. Thanks very much for that. Have a nice weekend. Any plans, Pete? Decorating the front lounge. Yeah,
just finish that. Yep.
Okay, lovely. All right then. Thanks, guys. Have a nice weekend.
Cheers.
By the way, one more thing. Who won the golf? I forget.
That was me, wasn't it?
No, but I had torn tendon. I had a handicap, didn't I?
Well, yeah, but I still won.
No, if you go over the handicaps, I would have won, wouldn't I? Really?
Well, was it? Not sure.
And I was in a wheelchair.
Right, okay.
Steve was pushing me. All right, then. All right, so again, no, thanks for that. You don't care that I got a handicap, do you? Anyway, I'm not going to share my orange badge with you. Have a nice weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.